Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hey, here we are. We're back. Said I was in the green room for a minute, but it's good to be back in the club, everybody, because UFC 271 is in the books, and we have a lot to discuss. As you can see, Hall of Fame panel here. We got Jose Youngs in Houston. We got Jed Meshew. We got Shaheen Al-Shadi. I am Mike Heck. Casey Lydon on the ones and twos. Jose, we will begin with you, my man, because you were in the building. You were inside the Toyota Center as Israel Adesanya successfully defended his title against Robert Whittaker. What was it like out there, seeing that fight live, seeing Izzy out there do his thing? And I'm curious how you scored the fight as well.
Yes, strong story.
We're off to the races.
Jose, that
was my fault. I had it 5-0 for Israel Adesanya, but I don't know if that's because I'm just watching it live and his strikes were just significantly louder than Robert Whittaker. Now, I'm not saying that's because Robert Whittaker didn't land anything. It's much different watching a fight live, especially when because where they have the media, there's that pole in the middle. And especially when they're on the opposite side, a lot of the offense that Israel and Robert Whittaker were putting out was on the other side of the octagon. So to me, to our friend Oscar Willis, to the man, the five-time WWE champion who was sitting right next to me for the entire fight, Booker T, he had a 5-0 for Israel Adesanya too. So anytime a Hall of Famer agrees with you, kudos to me. So I had a 5-0 for Izzy, but it was razor thin. I saw some people say it was 3-2 Izzy. Some people said it was 4-1 Izzy. I didn't see many people say Robert Whittaker won, but I'm not going to say they're wrong either. It was an incredibly close fight. I just thought Israel Adesanya won 5-10-9. That's it. But pretty electric entrances. It's just, it was a weird mood. There was a lot of boos for Robert Whittaker at the beginning. And then I want to say by around 3 or 4, they were all chanting Bobby. And then a lot of boos for Israel Adesanya. So just it was a hard audience to gauge. I'll tell you that much. I don't know if that's because they were exhausted from the co-main event with Tai Tuivasa and Derek Lewis, but definitely a unique, it wasn't like the previous Houston cards. I'll tell you that much, but still an electric crowd altogether.
Sean, Adesanya wins 48-47, 48-47, 49-46. Jacob Montalvo and Doug Crosby scored it 1-2-3 for Adesanya, 4-5 for Whittaker. Mike Beltran, who, like Jacob Montalvo, was refereeing several fights on this card before sitting in the judges' seat for the main event, gave the second round to Robert Whittaker and scored the first round and 3-5 for Israel Adesanya. So I'm curious how you scored the bout. I think the judges got it right. I think a lot of us will agree the judges got it right. Was this a 49-46? Was this a 48-47? How did you score it?
Yeah, I would agree that the judges got it right in this instance. And really quick, before we even go into it, I find it weird that Texas, I know a lot of commissions do this for smaller shows, things like that, making the officials work both referee and judging. it's a little strange to have Texas do that on a big show like this. UFC, like, there's already a lot of pressure on these guys to be referees. Don't, let's not them make them judges as well. Like, come on, guys. But that's Texas being Texas. But I agree. I had it 3-2 for Izzy. For me, it felt like round one was obviously a very definitive Izzy Adesanya round. Round five felt like a very clear Robert Whittaker round for me. And then the in-between rounds were a lot closer than actually the commentary. It seemed like led the... you to believe, like, Michael Bisping was really on one tonight in favor of Israel Adesanya. I felt like this was a much more competitive fight than I love Mike on the commentary booth, but I felt like this was a much more competitive fight than he was letting on. But I did give Izzy round two and three. Those were very close. And then I gave Robert round four for me. So ends up 3-2, but ultimately I think we got the right call. To me, it felt like Izzy won the fight. I know Robert feels like he won the fight, and he certainly put up a better showing and better performance than he did a couple of years ago. I mean, there's no doubt there. You saw the evolution of his game and how much he has worked to really close the gap between these two. But ultimately, Izzy wins this fight, and I think we got it right.
Jed, there was some really interesting body language coming from Robert Whittaker after that first round, right? He was heading back to the stool, already looking like defeated, looking psychologically damaged by that first round against him. And then he came out, closed the gap in the second. I thought the third round was better. And then clearly the final 10 minutes of the fight were much better for him. At the end of the day, when this is all said and done, I thought we were going to see some tomfoolery here with the judging. I thought maybe we'd get a split decision. Ultimately, the judges got it right. But Adesanya gave himself a 7 out of 10. You agree with that score, or do you go a different way?
Yeah, sure. 7 out of 10 is fine. That's a C, and that's probably what Israel Adesanya deserves, you know. MMA Fighting's official scorecard, by the way, is 48-47 for Adesanya. And I will be honest, that's closer to a 50-45 than it is to 48-47 for Whittaker. I think Whittaker probably won rounds 4 and 5, but I am not married to those ideas. Like, if you told me, like, I have absolutely no problem with Jose's full card for Izzy. I think he just pretty clearly won the fight. So this is also awesome for me, because to me it was really obvious that Izzy won this fight by like a very clear margin. And I thought I was being generous by giving Rob 2 rounds, but apparently that's other people feel things. I saw on our post, while we were doing the presser, you and Casey were doing, I saw a bunch of people voting for Rob. So I was surprised. And I think that that's mostly a narrative thing. And to some extent that goes back to Izzy's performance, right? Like, I think Izzy came out strong and then sort of just kept it in third gear and won a pretty convincing, in my eyes, decision, because he didn't have to try. He didn't get pushed in any real way. He just had to be himself, and then he got to carry the day. So a C is a fine score for him.
Yes, and we thought maybe Dr. Joe Rogan was onto something with an injured right hand. Turns out that was not the case whatsoever, and it is what it is. So,
you
Jose
really sold on that because he kept throwing the right hand. So
it was very strange. Just the mere mention of that whole thing, but Jose, Robert Whittaker took the loss in stride, handled himself like a champ. Yeah, he thinks he won the fight, but said Adesanya literally won the fight, so he's not going to take anything away from him, things like that. He feels like he said the words, it is inevitable that we will fight a third time. I don't know if we're going to see this fight for a third time. I still feel that these are the two best middleweights in the world, and maybe someday down the line we might see it again. But where does Robert Whittaker go from here? Because there are some interesting matchups for him. You could do the Brunson rematch. You could do Marvin Vettori. You could do Sean Strickland. Where does Robert Whittaker go from here? Because it seems like he's happy with the performance. It's a bummer that he lost and he's not the champion right now, but he seems happy with the performance and he wants to keep on trucking.
I unmuted myself this time. I think the Brunson fight might make a little more sense than the other ones, not because I want to see that rematch, but Derek Brunson has been pretty vocal all week that his next fight is probably going to be his last fight of his fight career. I think he even tweeted that, like, one more fight and I'm out and something like that. So we always talk about how like the Joe Benavidez of the world and now the Robert Whittakers of the world, where they're so clearly the second best fighter in the division that it's hard to feed them contenders because you don't want them just knocking them off. So what better fight than to give someone that isn't going to have another fight than Robert Whittaker be Derek Brunson. Derek Brunson gets a chance to ride out into the sunset, avenging a loss, and Robert Whittaker gets to fight a guy that if he beats, he's not in danger of kind of halting his rise up the ranks. So I think that's the fight to make sense. But honestly, if you're going to give me Robert Whittaker versus Paulo Costa, Marvin Torrey, Sean Strickland, I don't particularly care. I'll watch any of those fights because Robert Whittaker is the man when it comes to fist fighting human beings for money. Just happens to be the second best fighter to do it at 185 pounds in the UFC.
Sean, one thing I wanted to ask you about is there's all this talk about fighter pay and this whole France Ngannou situation. And it's interesting that Israel kind of brought this up himself at the press conference, that the contract, sure, it was about him, but it's his hope that this is a trickle down effect for everybody involved. And he even mentioned some of the debuting fighters and some of the first level contract fighters that, yeah, we're not going to make them rich or anything, but we want to at least have them in a position where they can make enough money to feed their families and have food and pay for their camps and not have to work two or three jobs. Do you think that this deal for Adesanya, like, do you believe him when he says that? Because Adesanya hasn't really given us any reason to not believe him. But do you really think that after seeing him say that and looking into his eyes and feeling the emotion behind it, that there's some truth to this, that maybe Adesanya is, he could be the voice for the voiceless, so to speak?
You're asking me if I think Izzy's new contract is going to essentially be trickle down economics to the lower class of UFC fighters.
No, it's not.
Of course not. It's not going to do anything. It's not going to change it. It's going to make a lot
exactly.
of money.
Exactly. Like trickle down economics. It's a lie.
Yeah,
it's a
lie. Exactly. Izzy's going to make his money. Like that's not at all. Not in any regard. So anyway, I want to go back to talking about what Jose was just talking about, because I think that's an interesting conversation of just what happens with Robert Whittaker now, because he is sort of the Max Holloway of this division right now in a really interesting way, where I completely agree with Jose. Like, Rob is obviously the second best guy at 185, and the gap between him and number three might be pretty vast. Like, we've seen him beat these guys already, the Jared Cannoneers of the world and such. And Jared's going to get this next title shot. I mean, hearing Rob in the post fight, it was interesting hearing him speak the way he did, because Mike, you called that quote out of saying, I have it right here. Honestly, a third fight between me and Izzy is inevitable. It's inevitable because I'm going to stomp anybody who comes in front of me again. Stomp anybody. Like, that's not really the language we hear Rob use this like very often. Like, I am interested to see how this division plays out, because it does feel like Rob's going to be this guy who's going to be cast now in this Max Holloway role, this Joseph Benavidez role, where he's going to get thrown every possible just random contender, and he's going to have to put together a really nice streak to make it back. But it seems very conceivable now that he could make it back. I mean, Izzy has talked about it potentially doing the 205 thing again at some point. Maybe when Rob does get to that point, Izzy will be at 205 by then, but I mean, it wouldn't shock me if we end up seeing a third fight a couple years down the line between these two guys.
Jed, what fight would happen first? Izzy versus Whittaker 3 or Izzy versus Khamzat Chimaev 1?
Oh, for sure. The second one. Izzy Whittaker 3 is not happening. I mean, I love the optimism. You just got all that pluck about you, Sean, but it's just not. Like, look, Robert Whittaker may well challenge for the middleweight title again if Israel Adesanya loses and or leaves to go up to 205. But he now has two, in my eyes, very decisive losses. Apparently not everybody agrees, but this is not a Max Holloway situation where Max needed one, maybe two wins because so many people felt he won the second fight. And even their first fight was very close. He's not like – Rob is not getting back to a title shot with three wins. Even if he goes out and beats Vittori, Costa, and Strickland, he's just not getting Israel again. Like, Israel's not going to do it, because it's just – and he even said it at the presser. He was not – you know, he said, yeah, sure, maybe, but it was a pat on the back to him or whatever. He's not into that fight, and with good reason. Like, why would he be? Even if they are the two best middleweights not competing in the light heavyweight division in Bellator right now in the world, they're just not going to run it back. He's going to have to get at least five wins. And in the time it takes Rob to get five wins, Israel's going to be gone. Like, he's going to be at 205 by then. So they're just not fighting again, and that's okay. We got one pretty good fight out of it and one changing of the guard moment out of it. So, you know, that's better than many not trilogies. What do you, many pairs of fights? So yeah, that's not happening, but Chimaev is very possible.
Oh man, I've jumped back in because I thoroughly disagree. I love you, Jed, but man, if you look at this division right now and the way this division is set up, there just is not a lot of depth at middleweight right now. There's like not a lot of guys that you can really throw out there as potential challengers outside of the immediate few of like a Strickland, like you said, or a Cannoneer. Like at that point, it's diminishing returns pretty hard in this division, and Rob's already beaten several of those guys as well. I don't know. It feels like there's certainly a path. I know Izzy wouldn't be interested, and again, maybe that's then when he goes to 205 and sort of takes on different challenges. But he does seem like a guy who is interested in doing the Kamaru Usman thing. We're just racking up these title defenses and sort of putting his name amongst the Anderson Silvas, the George St. Pierre's in UFC history. We could very quickly reach a point, depending on how much Rob wants to fight, where he's kind of just the only guy. Like, he's the only guy left. There are a few youngsters coming up in this division, the Andre Muniz's or the Nasruddin Imanovs. I can't ever say that guy's name. There are a couple of them coming up that could be compelling, but for the most part, there's just not a lot there in terms of potential challengers for Izzy that we haven't seen outside of the Cannoneers and, you know, the Strickland.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is we've got guys coming up, and we talked about this on the pre-fight show. I think Izzy's done. This is his last year at 185. I think he's at 205 next year. He wants to fight three times. He's got the one under Bob, with Bob now. He's going to fight Jared Cannonier. Sorry, I was blanking there. In June, he's going to try and run one back late fall or in December over Sean Strickland or whoever. But certainly he won't be fighting Robert Whittaker in December of this year. And then brought him up. I think Kamaru Usman is one of the big reasons why. I think Izzy gets his three fights that he wants, and then he can move up to light heavyweight because he's friends with Kamaru Usman, who is going to want to move up and get a second belt to cement his legacy, do the same things GSP did, really drill down on that. And so if Izzy moves up to 205, then Usman can come up and fight for the middleweight belt, and it all works in symbiosis. I would be frankly really shocked if Israel Adesanya is still defending his middleweight title in 2023. And so I just don't see a path for Rob to get another crack at him.
Well, time will tell. We'll see what happens. Maybe things, you know, this is MMA and weird things happen. So, Jose, I want to let you go in a moment, but I want to ask you one more question. I think it's a question that everybody sort of wants to know after this night. So make sure you're unmuted, because this is a very important question, especially after what we've experienced over the last 2 hours. What is Booker T like in real person? Oh. Like being around him? What is he like? He might have stolen the entire show this weekend.
The dude wears more jewelry than any other human being I've ever met in my entire life. It was fair. Like, I sat down next to Oscar for the main event, and then I just looked to my left. I'm like, is that Booker T? And he just looks at me. He's like, what's up, man? And then he just like fist bumped me. And I was like, it's a lot of jewelry, my guy. Like, he was wearing like every Hall of Fame ring he's ever had on one hand. And then, I mean, even if you like, he has Dustin Poirier questions. I don't think Dustin Poirier knew who he was. And I don't think Dana White knew who he was. And Robert Whittaker maybe, but obviously Israel Adesanya knew who he was. But yeah, super interesting cat, and is apparently a really big fight fan. You know, we got to interview Trey the Truth. Houston Icon, where technically I interviewed Trey the Truth, and several other media members happened to be there recording it at the same time. No comment on that. But yeah, it was a very interesting night of fights for guest fighters and celebrity individuals here. Couldn't find Carlos Correa, though. That clown.
Well, you did a fantastic job, my man. So head on out, get some rest. Safe travels back to Arizona, my man, and we appreciate you jumping on after a long day at the office. Much appreciated, my man.
Hasta luego, gents. Have fun wrapping up this post show. Only say positive things about Roxy.
Always. Of course.
Come on, animals.
We will certainly talk about Roxy. That number two spot is about to be filled, by the way, by a very special guest, a very positive presence, if you will. I don't know if that gives it away, but
is it Roxy?
We shall see. How amazing would that be? This would be the greatest post-fight show in the history of MMA if we could get Roxy up in here. But congratulations to Roxy, by the way. We'll talk about her a little bit more. But
support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury, not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, the art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank and Trust. Members FDIC.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
We got to talk about Tai Tuivasa, Sean Alshadi, because I was, you know what? I'm just going to say this. You two both owe me an apology. You two both owe me an apology. Because first of all, I picked Robert Whittaker. You guys were like, wow. But none of you really chastised me for it. When I picked Tai Tuivasa, you both chastised me. You both made me feel silly. You made me feel this big. But now I feel like I'm 8 feet tall, Jed Meshew. I feel like a giant after the way that fight ended. What a victory for Tai Tuivasa. He gets it done. Dude just knocking out everybody. That elbow from hell sent Derek Lewis unconscious. Crazy moment, crazy fight. First your apology, and then your reaction to the finish and what Tai Tuivasa has been able to put together over these last few fights.
I give you no apology. I stand by everything I said. I was just wrong. Like, sometimes I'm wrong, but I was right in most of the process. I was just wrong in the outcome. Cause I said, I was like, well, you know, there's a world where Tai can win this, but he's not great defensively. And at some point he's going to get hit by Derek Lewis and he's going to fall over and die. And he did. He got hit by Derek Lewis a lot, but he just didn't fall over and die. Which is not, I mean, dude, Greg Hardy buzzed him, and Derek Lewis hits a lot harder than Greg Hardy. Like, I did not at all see this coming, and nothing but props and respect to Tai Tuivasa. Like, he came to do exactly the thing he said. He's going to come and swang and bang, and he did it, and he won the swanging and the banging, which, let's be honest. You want an apology from me, Mike? Be honest. If I told you what that fight was going to look like, would you have been like, yeah, Tai Tuivasa is going to win? He's going to go in the middle and brawl and eat a bunch of lunchboxes from Derek Lewis. Would you have been like, oh, yeah, that's a fight. Tai wins. Like, no, okay, he's going to die.
So you would have told me that Derek Lewis would have landed a record-setting 2 takedowns in 1 round and then landed those lunchboxes? Because that's what happened. You would have predicted takedowns and ground and pound.
No, I'm saying if I told you that that was what happened, would you have been like, yeah, Tai's going to win this fight?
I still, I don't know, probably
there's
not.
No,
but remember,
way.
I remember what I said.
The first takedown, Tai was dead. Like, I was like, oh, I can think of very few places I'd like to be less than underneath Derek Lewis swinging them hands. Like, that's just not a place I want to live. But Tai Tuivasa, and he didn't get up safe either. It's not like he protect. He got up and just started chucking them back. It was awesome. Tai Tuivasa's the man. But I just had no belief his chin could do that, and it did. So nothing but props to that dude, man.
Hey, my point was 99 times out of 100, I'm picking Derek Lewis in that situation when asked. But consider this time 100. The Houston factor was a concern, and I think Tai Tuivasa is being a little undervalued. I said that plus 160 looked delicious and it was yummy. And if you followed my lead, if you piggybacked upon me, you're eating prime rib tomorrow during the Super Bowl, and you're welcome. Sean, your thoughts on Bam Bam's performance and what he was able to do tonight? And because that was amazing, just tremendous stuff.
I mean, I will say, man, you called this one and you almost called the Whitaker one. And part of me actually wanted Rob to win that just so you could come on to this post-fight show and just go pure stone cold and just really put it in our faces how absolutely wrong all of us were. And you were correct. I would have really loved that and appreciated it. But no, man, I mean, how can you not love what's going on here? I mean, this is just crazy at this point, right? Like, this is a guy, Tai Tuivasa, who 2 years ago, he's at this time, literally 2 years ago, he is in the midst of a three fight slump. He's losing, you know, all these fights now. He was, it seemed like he was a guy who was pushed too hard, too fast, and it kind of derailed his career. And all of a sudden you wake up and he's a winner of five straight now. He is the life of the party at heavyweight. Like, he is just the party at heavyweight. The post fight, like, procession of shooies that he now does after a win, just walking backstage, like, that's become an event unto itself. And it's incredible, man. Like, you absolutely have to absolutely love this. I mean, this is just why this game is so much fun, is these kind of guys who are able to sort of revive their careers out of nowhere. And all of a sudden now we wake up tomorrow, Tai Tuivasa is a top five heavyweight. He's a top three heavyweight, maybe, depending on how you want to do your rankings. Like, that's crazy, man. That's crazy. I doubt few of us would have called that as recent as a year ago. And so I agree 100% with what Jed was saying too. I mean, the most impressive part of this to me tonight was the shots that Ty was taking, because Derek Lewis has made a career of just, like, his career is lined with the bones of these fallen peripheral up-and-comer contenders who dared to swing and bang with this guy. And he and Tai Tuivasa went in there and did exactly that and somehow survived. And he ate some shots. Like, he ate some monster shots that would have just killed any normal human being and would have deaded a lot of different heavyweights in this division. And he just popped right back up and was just throwing him in his face. Like, that was absolutely crazy to watch. It was a ton of fun. And I am just so in love right now with where this heavyweight division is. It feels so much fun. It feels like anything is possible on any given night right now. There's a lot of just interesting names, a lot of interesting storylines. And again, when Tai Tuivasa is all of a sudden in this conversation now, because he is in this conversation. He's like one fight away from an actual title shot now. It's a ton of fun. I absolutely love how this has all gone.
I think fun's like actually the perfect word to describe this division right now. It's just a lot of fun. And Tai Tuivasa is a very interesting piece of this mixing of the martial arts. As we welcome in the Prince of Positivity himself, Alexander K. Lee. I don't demand an apology from you, AK. You just didn't believe me when I said Tai Tuivasa was gonna win this fight, but you didn't chastise me for it.
When did I say that? Did I even say that?
You just didn't believe me. Who did you? You picked Derek Lewis. You didn't believe me.
That doesn't mean I didn't believe you. That just means I thought that Derek Lewis would win. That doesn't mean I didn't think Tai Tuivasa had a chance. That's not the same thing.
No, you just didn't believe me. It's okay. It's all right. We're all good. Don't worry about that. I want to get your thoughts on the performance. And also, this is a big topic during the pre-fight Q&A. The walk-up music, the selection from Tai Tuivasa. What did you think?
Someone nailed it. I'm sorry, guys. I haven't been on the whole show. Did anyone in the comments, someone on the pre-fight Q&A, when we were discussing what would Tai Tuivasa walk out to, a bunch of songs got thrown out. And I distinctly remember someone saying, "Girls Just Want to Have Fun" by Cyndi Lauper. And I was going to comment on it. I wish I had now. So mystery person, if you're out there, please claim your prize. We'll give them an Otno point, maybe, Mike. I don't know if that's official. Again, that's worth like... Yes, on to the next one. Point is worth something like 6,000 Ethereum now, I think, on the current market. I don't know. It's way up there. It's crazy. So, but yeah, someone called it. So great job there. There's a lot of other good suggestions. I can't remember what I said. I said, I keep saying Carly Rae Jepsen. I don't know if that's ever going to happen. He's more of a 90s guy. So yeah, the walkout was on point. The post-fight shoey was good, except for the guy who did it with him, who was rightfully called out. I do believe... It looked like a pre-planned thing, some sort of sponsorship, maybe even. It was like two custom shoey shoes. One of them said Drink, one of them said West. So I don't know if that means something as a brand or something. And that guy might have been a friend of Tuivasa. It looked like he sought that guy out specifically. But you guys can see the clip that's out there. Tuivasa, of course, guzzling his shoey like a champ. The other guy doing it like I would, because I don't drink alcohol, just letting probably 95% of the alcohol just spill out of his mouth. People were not impressed, did not seem to be impressed with that. But Tai Tuivasa himself was very impressive. I kind of agree with what Jed was saying, that if you had told me he was going to go in there and eat friggin' bombs from Derek Lewis and somehow come out with a win, I would have said you're crazy. I know he's a young man, one of the few heavyweights contenders under the age of 30. So he does have a young chin, but still, he was eating clean shots. So he is tough as hell. Great defense, great poise, great ability to sort of recover from those shots. And when he got going, when he finally got that final flurry going, I mean, it was the elbow that put him away. He landed like maybe two or three bombs of his own before that. And then that finishing elbow was just right on the button. And, you know, it's not like Lewis can't be knocked out. We have seen him lose by knockout before. But that, even taking that into account, that was stunning. An amazing performance by Tai Tuivasa, who is really going to shake up our rankings. I think number 14 in our rankings. Derek Lewis really was number 4, number 5. So Tai Tuivasa, he's a top 5 heavyweight, it looks like.
How about that? How much fun is this division right now? It's really fun. I enjoy it. Jed, what is this look? What is this look on your face?
Tai Tuivasa is a top 5 heavyweight. That is a true statement and speaks volumes.
God, you're such a hater, dude. Jeez, have some fun with it. Come on, man. I'm not a
fan, but like,
come on. You are such a hater. Gosh.
I don't think it's hating to be like, I really enjoy Tai Tuivasa, but the fact that he is a top 5 heavyweight speaks some things about that division. Maybe I'm wrong, and that dude's gonna come out and he's gonna be our new heavyweight champion. He has a chance now, but I suspect he's probably just gonna get tackled by Curtis Blaydes or Stipe Miocic and sat on for 25 minutes, and we're all gonna not have fun anymore. That's how the world works.
And see, this is the reason why this is the perfect co-main event, because while it hurt our feelings to see Derek Lewis lose, it doesn't really hurt him that much, because you're just going to throw him in another fight and we're going to be so excited about it. Just don't do it in Houston, UFC.
Yeah, no more. No more. Let's give this guy a break from the Houston. Let's let him not have a home game for once. It seems like he doesn't enjoy it.
Send him to London. Send him to London or some other country at this point and let him fight as far away from Houston as possible.
One, we should definitely do that, because Derek Lewis in London is just a fun thing to visualize. But you got to give him one more fight in Houston. It just has to be against Jared Vanderaa or like some dude that he is going to clobber, so you can get that big win energy. Like, I want him to have that moment in H-Town as opposed to just being sad and defeated, because it's pretty tough.
I agree with you. So that was a great win for Tai Tuivasa. Derek Brunson, tough, great start for Derek Brunson. It, unfortunately, Jared Cannonier just got cooking in that second round. That was a violent finish. Earned him a $50,000 bonus. Earned him a future date with Israel Adesanya, which, if Adesanya has his druthers, this fight's going to happen early summertime, maybe as early as June. So great win for Cannonier. Renato Moicano, tremendous win for him on the main card. I know a lot of people in Twitter land were very excited to see Alexander Hernandez lose. You are. I mean, that's just how it is. And then Bobby Green, Nazareth Hakparast. Good way to start the night. Bobby Green looked fantastic. He continues to win. The other bonuses went to Douglas Silva, De Andrade versus Sergey Morozov. They got the fight of the night, which I thought was a really good call. I thought there was a very good chance that they'd give it to Roxanne Modafferi versus Casey O'Neill, but they did not do that. And just a great night. Tai Tuivasa got the other bonus as well. Much deserved. So, Sean, I'm going to go to you. Roxanne Modafferi, we just saw the final 15 minutes of her fighting career. We didn't get to see her walk out on television, which is absolute travesty, but it is what it is. She came out. She did her thing. She had a super fun fight with Casey O'Neill. I cannot believe it was a split decision. No disrespect to Roxy, but we got ourselves a splitty. But what did you think of the fight? I thought the fight absolutely ruled. It was a really great fight. Her stock went up even in the loss. Casey O'Neill got tested in the right way. This is a perfect piece of matchmaking. This went about as well as it could have, did it not?
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about that split decision in a second because I definitely got thoughts on that. But yeah, I mean, man, this was the way you kind of like if she wasn't going to win and this was a really hard matchup for her. I mean, everybody knew it coming in, sort of what the game was for this and what the matchmaking play the UFC was trying to do here. But I mean, this was pure Roxy, man. This is why she was so beloved. She the whole way through 15 minutes, she tested someone who is probably, if we're being honest, a future title contender, a future title challenger in this division. And she tested her for 15 minutes. She didn't stop moving forward. She never quit. It was all heart all the way through. And it's just, that is who Roxy has been this whole time, 20 years of just taking on all comers, never complaining, never turning down a fight, always being willing to fight anybody at any time since the very, very beginning of women's MMA. I mean, that's who Roxanne Modafferi is, and that's who she was in the beginning, and that's how she went out at the end. And you saw even in her post-fight interview, in her post-fight press conference, she was just proud of her performance. She was happy to have gone in there and shown that she's improved and that she's, you know, the martial artist that she feels like she is. And she's not wrong, man. She has improved. Like the late evolution of Roxanne Modafferi is one of the coolest sport, like just little side stories that we've seen over the last couple of years, because truly the last like 5 years of Roxanne Modafferi were the best she had ever looked. And it's rare you see fighters that at her age continue to evolve and continue to get better like that. So it was a great, in my opinion, it was a very fitting way for Roxanne to go out. But man, that scorecard. Let's talk about Robert Alexander here for a second, because good Lord, that man had an all-time stinker of a night. Like, that dude needs to take a bow, because I know when we go to Texas, the judging and the officials are always just, it's a roller coaster. You're signing up for it when you're going to Texas. But that dude might have had one of the worst hours of judging I have ever seen in my life, because in back-to-back fights, he gave Roxanne Modafferi the score over Casey O'Neill, and then he gave Jared Vandera the score over Andrei Arlovski, and both of which were absolutely atrocious. I mean, if you look on MMA decisions, but I think both fights were pretty unanimous, 30-27s, or the Arlovski one was maybe 29-28s. But regardless, there was no justification for any of that, and I just love how none of it really matters, because we're not going to get a chance to have – there's going to be no recourse for obvious ineptitude. There's going to be no opportunity to get this guy to explain how he came to these decisions. It's all just very silly. And apparently this guy's a rocket scientist, so that shows you that even a rocket scientist can't figure out how to judge MMA fights. If you can't crack that riddle, if that guy can't crack it, nobody's can. It's just ridiculous that we have to deal with this every time we go to Texas, and we know it, and like we call it ahead of time. It's so silly.
Yeah, that's why I was extremely worried about the main event, that something fishy was going to go on, but luckily we didn't get anything crazy like that. What did you think of the scoring, Jed, for that fight, and just Roxy's performance overall? I mean, Casey O'Neill, and I kind of agree with her in a way that it was probably kind of annoying for her to be just the fighter that is fighting Roxanne Modafferi in her final fight. Like, I could understand the annoyance and how she feels about that. Like, I mean, just as a fighter, as somebody on the come up, I get it. I think she understands it a little more now that the retirement is actually here and she got to see it and she got to share the cage in that moment with her. But your thoughts on the fight, what Roxanne sort of left in Houston tonight, and just the scoring and all of it.
I'm not going to spend any time talking about Casey O'Neill and her predicament. I'm disappointed. I'm extremely disappointed in my colleague, Sean Elshadi, for believing that the problem here was Judge Robert Alexander. The problem was Judges Ivan Guzman and Kerry Hatley, who also did double duty and refed some fight in there, I'm pretty sure. At least one, maybe not more. Because you nailed it, Sean. You were dead right. There is no recourse. No one's going to have to explain their scorecards. Nothing will happen. And if either Guzman or Hatley had any sense of pride or fun or whimsy or respect for what Roxanne Modafferi has done for this sport, they would have given her a garbage decision to walk out on. Because why not? What is lost by giving Roxanne Modafferi a bad split decision win? Yeah. Like, as far as I'm concerned, Alexander is the only person who looked at that correctly and was like, I know that this is bad, but I'm just going to do it and let's see what happens. Maybe one of these other two people will also do it. And then we've had some fun here, haven't we? This is kind of a feel-good story. And who really cares if Casey O'Neill gets an L on her record? Sure, she'll care because she'll only get, you know, half the money she's expecting, and that'll be unfortunate for her. But in the long term, that's not going to set back her career. That's just going to set back her bills for a few months, whereas the rest of us can feel warm and happy inside because Roxanne Modafferi, who, by the way, has come up on the wrong end of some tough decisions over her career, finally gets a bad decision in her favor in a moment where it means a lot. Like, come on. This is why no one will ever let me judge, because I would have 100% may have scored that 30-24 for Roxanne and shamelessly done it. You couldn't have stopped me.
Yeah, listen, Jed, you're right. And clearly they don't care about Casey O'Neill's career either, because we always say that fighters, you know, learn more from their losses than their victories. This could have been huge for her career if she had lost to a veteran like Roxanne Modafferi. I mean, that's just going to put her down the championship path. Plus, she wouldn't have gotten booed after. That's really the judge's fault, not Casey O'Neill's fault. You know, she put on a great effort, and she would have instead been cheered, and fans would be like, man, how did Casey O'Neill lose this? Like, she got screwed. Applause for Casey O'Neill instead. So, Jen, you're on the right track, really. Yeah.
And Casey O'Neill would have learned an even more valuable lesson that we try and tell people all the time. You can't leave it in the hands of the judges. So we may have just derailed Casey O'Neill from being a future dominant finishing champion because we instilled in her that she can leave it to the hands of the judges, because even the judges in Texas won't do the right thing and give that fight to Roxanne Modafferi.
Yeah.
A bad thing happened tonight, and I'm ashamed that Sean Alshadi does not recognize that.
Mm-hmm. This was a travesty.
That was a
tremendous speech. That was a tremendous speech. Sean, your response to what just happened here, because
I mean, I'm just jealous of that energy. That dude is on like 3:15 a.m. time right now, and I can't, to be able to pull something out like that at 3:15, that's impressive. Give me whatever you're having right now. Jesus.
Yeah, we gotta get an energy drink sponsorship over here at MMAfighting.com. So pretty solid night of fights. Your BTL champ, Jed Meshew. There you go. Even though he doesn't.
That's how you hold that title down, baby.
Absolutely.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Let's go to the peeps. Let's take a few questions from the peeps before we get on out of here. Some different stuff, some fun stuff.
All right, let's do the peeps. who we got here?
Shout out Andre Arlovsky. The man just keeps winning fights. Kyler Phillips, tremendous performance tonight. Dude. He looked outstanding.
Andre Arlovsky, man, I didn't even realize this dude has won 5 of his last 6, and it's literally 22 years since he was UFC debut. Like 22 years. When he started in MMA, like I think the Gore Bush thing was still going on. Like
he started in 99.
Yeah, like the
99.
He like Y2K was getting talked about when this dude was like starting his MMA career, and he is still winning 5 of 6 fights at age 43. Like, this is crazy.
We made a huge deal about Roxy being a legend and a pioneer because she is. He was fighting for 4 years before she ever stepped in a cage, and he's still going and probably is going to be going for another 12. This dude's the man. He is the greatest heavyweight of all time, and I actually am starting to believe that that is the case based purely on longevity.
All right, so he has – this was his 37th – his 37th UFC appearance, which is the most, obviously, heavyweight record. 22-14 now, one no contest. Second most UFC appearance overall behind Cerrone and Jim Miller. He hasn't had a finish since May 2015 and is somehow still tied for the fourth most UFC heavyweight knockouts. What a bizarre character. He's now 12-10. This is his second run with the UFC. He's now 12-10 with the one no contest. So what a bizarre.
People with more fights. None of them are like, they've all got to be like featherweights too. Like he's the only person above like 170 that's fought 30 times. Like he's
oh, in the UFC? No, it's just it's Cerrone and Miller. Yeah, it's Cerrone and Miller.
That's no, like even the other people below him on the list, next few people, they can't be heavyweights or even light heavyweights. Nobody's doing it. It's just like lightweights.
Frank Mir might have been up there. Probably not 30 though. I don't think he hit 30. But yeah, I see your point.
Arlovsky's the main. But
the question is, could he get a top 10 next?
When he's probably getting Derek compete. Lewis next.
Oh. No, please no. Don't do that.
Yes.
Let's not do that.
They gave him to freaking Francis when Francis was coming up. Like, they're going to give him Derek Lewis.
I mean, he's kind of earned a top 10 fight at this point, which is very bizarre and crazy to say.
And while Derek Lewis will probably knock him out in a horrifying fashion, it's not inconceivable that Andre could do his weird – like stick and move on the outside and just kind of kick Derek's legs for a while and win a really awkward decision. Like that's in play, even if it's not likely.
Unfortunately, we're not going to get the chance to matchmake for him on to the next one. I'm not going to pick him as a wild card. I'm going with the same matchup. I've been saying for the last year, Romanov, you got to give him Romanov. That's the fight. It's a sucky fight. It hurts my feelings to say it out loud, but that's the fight. That's the matchup.
That's all he gets thrown into is sucky fights. Like he's not getting gimmies.
That's sucky of a fight.
But he's not getting gimmies at any point during this. They're just kind of just throwing him to whoever wants to fight Andre Arlovsky at this point. Like, and that's what it's been going on for the past like several years. It's utterly crazy for a guy who was getting told to retire like a decade ago.
I'm putting him in just my heavyweight rankings this month, by the way, guys. He's for sure.
We almost had Fedor in there. And like, are people going to tell me that Fedor's recent success is better than – no, and I think that was deserved. But it's like, is it better than what Arlovsky has done in the UFC? I don't know. Like, I think it's comparable. I think if you're going to vote for Fedor, I think you could certainly make a vote for Arlovsky. Mike, we had someone tag both of us on Twitter, our pal Reno, a friend of the On to the Next One show. And he said Andre Arlovsky versus Walt Harris. This would be a rematch, of course. The first fight, I mean, it wasn't like the greatest fight. It was a split decision, close fight. And it was later overturned. It actually became a no contest. And it was quite a while ago. It was like 3 or 4 years ago now. So that's actually not a bad – we're always trying to find the right matchup for Walt Harris too. Maybe that's the one. Maybe give him the Arlovsky rematch.
God, no.
Wouldn't hate it.
I don't hate it.
Obviously, you didn't watch the first one. That fight was not something you
needed. It was not good. Second time. I mean, is any Arlovsky fight at this point?
Yeah.
what are we doing? Was any, you know?
Look, the Vanderoff fight was honestly way more entertaining than I expected it to be. I'm not saying it was good, but it was much better than I thought it was going to be.
It was fine.
It wasn't good, but it was better than I thought it was going to be.
I had to lower
Andre Arlovsky.
What else we got? Joseph Boza, what are the panel's thoughts of Douglas Silva de Andrade versus Sergey Morozov getting fight of the night? That was on the early Fight Pass prelims. Normally, early prelims on Fight Pass don't get bonuses. So, yeah, that was an interesting choice. You could have gone Lewis Tuivasa. You could have gone a number of different ways with this, Sean. But did the UFC get this one right? Because I have no issue with this selection for fight of the night. The only other way I would have gone was just out of pure joy and positivity. We give it to Roxy and Casey because that was a fun fight. But other than that, this was probably the best fight of the night, was it not?
Yeah, I mean, if you're not going to give it to Ty and Derek, this is certainly the second best thing you could do. And it probably, I mean, this was the most complete fight of the card, right? Like, it was a crazy comeback. There was different elements in it, whereas Ty Tuivasa and Derek was just more of a brawl. I certainly don't mind it. And also, I mean, if you watch Douglas Silva de Andrade's post-fight interview, like with the media, his scrum, seemed like a bonus was really, really important to him in his life and sort of where he is at right now. He's talking about needed to get his mom a new wheelchair and all sorts of things. And he was actually very emotional. He was crying during a part of it. So, I mean, if they're going to give it to that guy, I'm not going to complain about it. That guy, again, he definitely felt like he needed the money. So it's good money to give to him.
Yeah, great fight. Jed?
Sure. I have no issues with it. I think the actual best fight on the card was Tuivasa Lewis. I think that had the most swings. It was back and forth, whereas the Silva de Andrade Morozov was a one and then a two. One guy was winning and then the other guy won. It was just a comeback, which is still fun and entertaining. I would probably put it, because it was so, it was such a binary, I would actually probably put it behind Modafferi O'Neil, because they got after it, you know, for 15 minutes. And I think that's probably a more entertaining fight on the whole to me. But I think Lewis Tuivasa was pretty clearly the best fight, but they already are making a lot more money and they're getting, you know, Tuivasa's getting that extra bonus. So I got no problems with giving a man who could use 50K, 50K.
AK. Bantamweights, right?
I was going to say, I'm never going to complain about bantamweights getting more money, getting their due. We had three bantamweight fights today, and they all delivered in different ways. I mean, the Ronnie Lawrence one was obviously more of a dominant performance for Ronnie Lawrence. Oh, actually, that's not true. Mana came back in the third round. So
that was a great fight.
Yeah. That was a great fight. And then, Collar Phillips, I was going to say, sorry, it's more one-sided. I saw the Rojo very tough, but I mean, that was Carla Phillips all the way. And then he just finished with an amazing triangle armbar. And DeAndre, I'm so high on Morozov. I was a little bit sad to see him lose. He looked great in the first round. I thought he was kind of living up to all this pre-fight hype I had. But Douglas Silva, DeAndre, just so tough. He's what now, like 23-4 or something like that? Like, the guy is just really freaking good. And I keep saying Morozov has faced nothing but killers. So this doesn't like take. I still think Morozov has a run ahead of him. He's 1-2 now, so we'll see how much rope the UFC gives him. I hope a little more. I think you give him the right matchups. I really do think he's a top guy. But for me, it would have been the co-main event. I just thought it was just so much dumb fun, and again, lasted much longer than you'd expect with someone taking that kind of damage from Derek Lewis. But yeah, for me, the most fun fight. I would love to give a fight of the night. Yes, they already are up there in the tax bracket. But if I'm ignoring that aspect, what was the fight I enjoyed the most? Tuivasa and Derek Lewis.
Thank you, Joseph. I mean,
they mixed the martial arts too. There was wrestling.
Some people don't like when they mix the martial arts, Jay, but we're fans of that around here. We like when the martial arts are mixed. That's how they should be.
Takeiro Man 91. Where does this fight rank amongst Adesanya title defenses? And what is Adesanya's best win? I mean, the Paulo Costa whitewash. Yeah. I don't know how you top that one. I mean, that's one of the all-time. That's one of the all-time greats right there.
Nah, his
Whitaker and Costa
for sure. Whitaker won.
Yeah.
That's not. Well, this says defense. This says defense, right? This says. Oh no. Yeah. This says specifically defense.
Best win. Best win.
No. That's true.
Yeah. Low key,
best win is for sure the Whitaker. Apparently, if you're Israel Adesanya, he believes that his first fight with Robert Whitaker was a title defense. He is stone wrong, but he got very upset at the post fight press conference because he doesn't know what the word interim means. But yeah, that's for sure his best win. It's one of the best defense, sure, Costa.
It's kind of weird, actually, when you look at Izzy's title defenses on a whole, because like I feel like we look at Izzy and we think of Izzy as, you know, this really fun fighter who's going to constantly put on really fun fights. But if you actually look at his four title defenses, only one of them is like a really like a performance you would want to go back and rewatch. The rest are kind of just, you know, hit or miss. Like, you had the Yoel Romero one. Marvin Vettori was okay. I mean, I don't think anybody's rewatching that. And then this tonight, Robert Whitaker, like, it was fine. I'm not complaining about it, but like outside of the Costa one, there's not like this standout title defense. It's very I don't think you would think that just naturally. It's interesting.
You mean in terms of dominance? You mean like dominance, like as far as like?
Well, I mean he's certainly dominant, you know, in all of these fights, but I just mean like in terms of the highlight reel. Like a lot of the highlight reel stuff was pre-title reign.
Honestly, though, if you go back and look, like Izzy's just tricky like that because his pre-title reign highlights are pick and choose. Like that first fight with Vettori is not a bad fight, but it's split decision. It's not great. Brad Tavares was a fine fight, but it's not like you're super stoked on that. You know, the Brunson KO is great. Anderson Silva, I know that fight won fight of the night. I remember that card sucking and that fight not being good. But people just thought it was good because it was cool and Izzy did the Matrix sway that one time.
It was fancy. There was some posing, yeah.
Yeah, that fight mostly just sucked, but it was fight of the night because the rest of that card was garbage. So, like, he kind of just does this. Izzy's, like Anderson Silva, Izzy is really – his level of excitement he can generate is very largely dependent on what his opponent is doing. Because, like, we saw that today. Like, Robert Whittaker – I'm not trying to bag on Bobby Knuckles because I respect the hell out of him. I think he's the second best middleweight in the UFC. He fought close to a perfect fight, and in so doing, and he didn't even come close to winning in my account. And what that means for him to fight a perfect fight is to absolutely not engage with Israel Adesanya at any point in time, because doing so is playing with fire. And so that's why this fight wasn't that exciting. And that's just sort of how Izzy works. If you want to play that game, he will stone you to death like he did with Bobby Knuckles the first time. But if you're going to not do that, he is content to sit in third gear and coast to a win because that's what he did. Like he didn't really try and get Robert out of there tonight. He didn't turn up the volume. He had a comfortable lead and he rode it. And that's just kind of what you get. I think we're going to see some bad title defenses out of him depending on how people approach fighting him.
I still think there's a case you made that this is. I agree, obviously, the Paulo Costa one. I mean, the build up to it, his actual performance, his shenanigans after, mileage may vary. So that was obviously great, and it makes for a great highlight reel clip for sure. Especially if we're just talking about his title defenses. But I do think you can make an argument qualitatively that this one was better because Whittaker obviously is a, I would think we would all rank him higher than Paulo Costa. We all think he'd probably beat Paulo Costa in a fight. He is the second best middleweight in the world. And I think this was, if not the best version of Whittaker we've ever seen, it's up there. I mean, like we said, he like said, Jeff, like you said, Jeff, like you said, Jed, this is, he fought the way he had to have a chance against Adesanya. It was not exciting at times. I understand it, but it was, again, the most effective strategy you could have. He, at least on two of the judges' scorecards, took two of the three rounds. It was a super competitive fight. And I think Adesanya also had to be at his best to deal with this version of Whittaker. It just happens to be that his best is so effective that it can make other people like look not as good, but as far as like the toughest opponent he's faced and like the best he's had to be, I think you can make a case for tonight. I don't know how many people will want to go back and rewatch this fight, but there's definitely moments of it that can be like studied and that show, I think, the greatness of both fighters.
Yeah, strength of schedule wise, this probably was number one, if we're being
honest.
If we're
looking for his best defense, it's for sure this fight. Like, I honestly think that this is one of those fights where the people who go back and watch it are going to be like, oh, that wasn't close at all. I think Robert Whittaker did a really great job of almost smoke and mirroring his way to effectiveness, but he had nothing. When I was watching him, maybe this is blinders, like I'm willing to admit, hand up, but I thought the first three rounds, it was very obvious that Israel was ahead. And when he figured out that he could double jab his way inside, Whittaker had more success, but man, I thought he was behind from Jump Street and he just looked awful to me mostly.
I have this next. All right. This is a comment, but I think it's an interesting comment. I want to know what you guys think.
Oasis Man, Izzy won. Granted, it was a John Jones type win, barely getting by, but Rob never had Izzy in trouble at any time. A John Jones type win. How about that? Sometimes that's what you got to do. I mean, yeah.
I think.
But remember the reaction after the Yoel Romero win? Remember that reaction? He's a boring fighter. It was negativity bombs dropping on Izzy. We don't really hear that much coming out of these last two wins, do we? I think people are just, they're okay with it because they like him. You know what I mean? It just seemed like we're in a different place because that Romero one was pretty bad. But these last couple, not really the most exciting win, Sean. So are people just we just get Izzy more? Like, we're cool with it just because, you know, the build to the fight, the post-fight comments, those are exciting. That's the star in him. And maybe we're starting to understand the chess match nature of what it takes to fight a guy like Adesanya.
Well, if you're talking about the Romero one, I feel like that was a special kind of weird and a special kind of bad, right? Because it's not really comparable to tonight, because I felt like tonight there was constantly something happening. Somebody was always trying to make something happen, and it was a chess match. Obviously, it was a very technical fight, but it wasn't two guys just kind of standing there making faces at each other, which is what the Romero one was for very long stretches. That one, and maybe a leg kick thrown in here or there. Like, that was just, if you go back and rewatch that fight, that's like a top 10 just very, very weird fight to rewatch. The Vittori one was, I think, more similar to this tonight, where it's just, you know, Izzy's winning and Izzy's doing exactly what he needs to do to win. And it's maybe not the most exciting thing, but it is just effective and efficient for the most part. And Robert was much more competitive tonight than Marvin ever was. But I think there's an element of people sort of understand now what they're going to get with Izzy. And also people just generally like and appreciate Izzy as a personality. And as someone in this game was just very interesting and very compelling to watch, regardless of what he's doing. But certainly, I mean, the Romero one is just a very, very odd bookmark in history to go back and revisit always.
Go ahead, Jed. Just go.
Oh, well, I think we're wrong. I think people don't appreciate this win. And like Jose said it, I wish we could talk to him again. But he said that, like, apparently the crowd started getting pretty pro Robert Whittaker as the fight went on and booing Izzy as it in the later rounds because of his effectiveness. I think, or lack of effectiveness. I think pretty clearly there's a difference between this and Romero, and Sean was correct. The Romero fight was just awful for Izzy. Like, he threw 40, like, five strikes in that whole fight, which was by far his lowest, like, ever, and outside of fights where he got KO wins, whereas in this one he probably threw 100 or something like that. Like, I'm not looking at the numbers, but he was up there. He was at least active.
170.
Yeah, like, the Romero fight was just, it was honestly one of the best game plans I've ever seen from Yoel Romero, and nobody appreciates just how amazing that was from him, but we don't need to go there. But I don't think people liked this fight, and I think we might be in a little bit of a bubble as far as respecting it, because everyone here really respects Robert Whittaker, but based on what Jose was saying and some of the stuff I saw, I think a lot of people are not stoked on Izzy doing what he did to win.
Yeah. It's interesting, some of the fighter perspectives on the fight, because Gaethje was just like, Whittaker 1, 3, 4, and 5. And then our...
That's insane. That's categorically insane.
Michael Chandler. Did you see what Michael Chandler had to say about it?
No, go ahead.
Something about... It was some really dumb take about how champions don't have to do anything to win.
He goes, quote, "Trust me, I love Izzy, but we have gotten to a point where a dominant champ just needs to stand there, throw a few shots per round, and he will not lose unless he gets caught, and will always get the nod. Izzy got paid on this last contract. Go fight. Don't you dare spar." That was Michael Chandler's reaction to the fight. And he also said, "Bring everything, didn't see it." So Michael Chandler taking shots at Adesanya.
You know, I don't like Michael Chandler. He has a point buried under a bunch of dumb stuff there. Like, I agree. It would be a lot cooler if Israel Adesanya decided he wanted to try really hard, because I think he would have won. The fight would have just been way cooler. And I think he could have potentially gotten Robert Whittaker out there. In my mind, he didn't do it because he knew he didn't need to. We used to see this with George St. Pierre all the time. He would just assert dominance over somebody and sit there. And, you know, Dan Hardy went 5 rounds with GSP, which is still an insane thing to say, like, right now, that Dan Hardy – GSP didn't just club Dan Hardy to death with his own body parts. So I think we see this with really dominant champions. John Jones was originally the one that's brought up. We saw that as well. To me, it is as much a structural problem that I have with it, because if you just do that and you maintain a level of control, that's great. It's dominant. You get the 5-0 whitewashing that Eugene Bearman wanted. You also are giving Robert Whittaker, the second best middleweight in the world, 25 full minutes to try and figure something out. Like, it's just better to try and finish fights than it is to dominantly win decisions. I think Izzy could have done that. If he had tried to put the hammer down, I think he probably could have gotten Whittaker out of there, but he didn't. And so he never was in trouble at all. But it is kind of like, you would rather him be Justin Gaethje and not just come forward like a madman.
That's very true. But all right, do you have anything else? One more question. Oh, go ahead, AK. Oh,
that was me. Oh. Okay, you're muted.
But AK's trying to speak, and no one's hearing him. Not one person in the whole world.
Yeah, sorry. The YouTube comments are very supportive of Chandler's comments. They're all saying Chandler's right. They agree. Great take by Chandler. And in fairness, look, the guy has a pass to say that kind of thing for the rest of his life after the Justin Gaethje fight, which I think even he acknowledged. He was like, yeah, I could have fought that fight smarter, but no, no, I knew I was in there with Justin Gaethje.
It wasn't a championship fight, though.
No, but just in general, I think Justin, he's just saying, like, I think more regarding the pay thing. Look, like, we get paid a certain amount of money. That means I should go in there and fight a certain way. And I don't know if I agree with that. But again, apparently a lot of the fans do. And I don't know if it is an absurd take, given how he performed in his own. He didn't win the fight, unfortunately. If he had won it, maybe I'd give it a little more credence. But
I think there's a kernel of truth there. But the idea, like, what he dressed it up in is dumb, because Izzy outlanded Rob by like 30 strikes and got a knockdown. So it's not like he just stood there and retained his title. He beat Rob's ass just in a much more demure way than he could have.
Yeah. And it's a difference between a regular season NBA game and the game 7 of the NBA finals. Game 7 of the NBA finals, if you're dribbling the basketball, more than likely you're going to try to go for the layup rather than the reverse double tomahawk jam, which you would do in the 10th game of the regular season. You go for the higher percentage shot, and that's what champions do. The object of the game is winning, and maybe it's not as aesthetically pleasing as it might be watching a non-title 3-round main card opener between Justin Gaethje and Michael Chandler. But when you're fighting for gold and the amount of money that can come with said gold, sometimes it changes strategies, because the name of the game is winning fights, and that's it. I mean, love it or hate it, and you can respect Chandler's opinion all you want, but the name of the game is win. And he won. And he won pretty easily, in my opinion. Close fight, competitive, but he won pretty easily.
How, in defense of Chandler, and sort of myself, how would we all feel if Texas went full Texas and Robert Whittaker won? How would we be judging Israel Adesanya's disconnected performance if he got screwed by the judges? Would we be saying the same things or not?
No, of course not. Genuine question. Absolutely not. Because ultimately, this is a results-based business, right? Yeah. Like, everything changes. Like, you even see it in the way some people do rankings, and we don't need to do a rankings discussion. But like, if judges decide that this person won, whereas everybody else sort of feels like, oh, that was a bad decision, people still go along with it because that is the result that was given to them, and then thus that is the result, and we all sort of work forward from that. Like, it's just it's very much a results-based industry, and I mean, if Izzy had lost this fight tonight, where I think all of us on this panel feel like he won the fight, some more so than others, that would be hell to pay in terms of Texas. Awesome. Like, that would be incredible chaos. And I mean, I don't know if that the UFC would be going back to Houston anytime soon if that was what they're having to
do. They absolutely would.
They would.
Are you kidding me?
Maybe. Oh, yeah. They have a deal with them.
If a split decision for Robert Whittaker came out tonight, that probably business-wise would have been a way better thing to happen than what actually happened tonight, because people would have been talking about this card. They'd have been talking about that fight for 2 weeks, and probably until Masvidal and Covington's card. And then when they book this trilogy, it's just going to be absolutely gigantic. And Izzy's going to be all sorts of pissed off. The build to the fight will get ugly and uncomfortable at times, and Whittaker's will be tested again. I mean, it would have been, we would have been talking about it and people been arguing about it and things could have got a little nasty on social media. But if they went the other way, if they went the Mike Heck way and we got the Texas chaos that I predicted, oh boy, we'd be having, I mean, there'd be 15,000 people watching this stream right now at 3:42 in the morning. But
Mike Heck would be slugging beers, just ripping his shirt off, going full Stone Cold, telling us how right he was. Guys, we really missed something there. We really missed a moment that we could have had.
I know. We really did. See?
I got to throw out a quick question. We haven't had a finish in a UFC main event this year yet. We've had all decisions, some of them more entertaining than others. Chikadze and Cater obviously was really fun to watch. The others, I liked Ngannou and Gone, and then Hermanson Strickland. But next week,
not even just in a UFC main event, but even if you throw in Bellator too, like sure. A 5-round main event, we have not had a finish yet in 2020.
Next week, Jamal Hill,
Eagle FC. Eagle FC, we got one.
Do you guys think Jamal Hill, Johnny Walker, we get a finish?
Yeah. Johnny Walker is not a man who goes to decisions.
Jamal Hill is not a guy that goes to decisions either.
Is that a Thiago Santos joke?
I'm saying Johnny Walker is a man who lives and dies by the right hand.
I mean, he's gone to like two.
Didn't Johnny Walker just go to a decision in his last fight?
Just went to
like a 5-round boring decision.
A super boring decision.
It is physically possible for him to do it, but I don't think it's going to continue to happen. Like it is happening.
Two of his last three fights have been really bad decisions.
I mean, man.
Yeah, but look at the.
He's over at SBG. You don't know what they're doing over there.
Oh, I forgot he's at SBG. Shit, never mind.
Oh, yeah. And Jamal Hill's also a finisher. So.
And real quick, fingers crossed. Next week, also the main event the same night is also Bellator's Neiman Gracie versus Logan Storley, and which I think is that their first non-title fight 5-round main event, or have they had it already?
I believe that'll be the first one. Yeah.
Okay. There.
And that could be a rough one.
Why would that be a rough?
And don't forget, Mike Perry versus Julian Lane, Knuckle Mania. That fight's going down next weekend too.
Good.
All right. It's definitely going to a decision. Are you kidding me?
Last question. It's a yes or no answer, I think.
Israel Adesanya will beat Anderson Silva's record for title defenses.
Fuck out of here.
What was Anderson's record? Was it
10? 10. Yeah, no. He's not gonna stick around that long.
Happening.
I mean, it
depends on which numbers
he's
we're going even, by.
He's only a 4. Yeah. He's not even halfway. Like, it's not gonna happen. People who were not around do not understand how incredible Anderson was. Like, it's different when you look at a Wikipedia page.
No sense of history.
When you look at a Wikipedia page and you see it, it's like, oh, yeah, that's great. But, like, people do not get how ridiculous that was for a long time in the moment. Like, Izzy's great, man, but he's not going to be Anderson.
Izzy is great. Izzy has also been astonishingly not injured in his career. And he's 30-something now. Isn't he 30? Is he 30 or 31? Like,
low 30s,
that's just not going to continue to be the case. It took Anderson 5.5-6 years to get 10 title defenses. Izzy has done a lot very quickly. At some point, he's going to blow out an ACL or something. Knock on wood. I'm not wishing that upon him. But this is the fight business. That will happen. He also just can't have a bad night. Like ever. There is a world where he could have lost tonight. And that's not inconceivable that could have happened. I mean, same thing could happen if he comes in listless against Jared Cannonier. Like, it's just impossible to get 10 title defenses. Nobody recognizes just how incredible that is. And so, yeah, it's not going to happen. Get out of here.
All right. Okay, your thoughts. Yes or no?
Yeah, no, I agree. It's just not going to happen. I just don't think he's going to stick around long enough. I think Jed said it's impossible, and I would add in today's UFC, there's just a different like schedule. There's just a different mindset fighters have now. Like they have all this kind of perspective of, again, wanting to go fight for other titles. He said he hasn't given up on going up to light heavyweight. So if you factor that in, that's another thing that get in the way. But like if he does that, I think he really needs to commit to sort of changing his body and leaving the middleweight division. So will he record 6 title defenses before that happens? Very unlikely. Again, it was, you know, we had that golden age of Anderson Silva and George St. Pierre where they were just racking up title defenses left and right, and they just don't keep that kind of schedule now. The UFC doesn't quite it's not as urgent as that for them to line up defenses anymore. They're happy. I mean, they put out more cards, but they're also happy to put like Hermanson and Strickland in a main event, for example. I know it's a disrespectful thing to say, but that wouldn't happen a long time ago. It is just different culture now, and I just, guys are more aware of the other opportunities they have too. As soon as they reach 4 or 5 title defenses, they're like, I'm the GOAT. Maybe I'll go do some boxing. I'm going to go fight Jake Paul. I'm going to go fight another division. It's just there's a lot more options than they used to have, and the focus isn't there. So again, 6 more defenses is a lot. I could say 3 more, 7. I could see him hitting 7, maybe 8. 10 is really, really, it takes a lot.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough sell, because if he really wants to go 205, which I think he really does, I think that's a really significant goal for him. It's the waters are going to be pretty damn deep at 205 once he gets there with the Prochazkas and the Teixeiras and those guys that could be waiting for him.
Prochazka Izzy is just that's the fight.
Yes,
God, give me that. Yes. Let Izzy just vacate the middleweight title or fight Cannoneer. You want to do that. I don't care about that fight at all. You're probably going to beat the brakes off him, but whatever. And then just vacate it and put on some weight and go fight Jiří Prochazka, because that is everything I want in this world. God, that's the fight.
You're going to get it, Jed. You're going to get it, because Glover's gonna beat Jiří. Then he's going to beat Alexander Volkov.
I love it. I'm with you.
Then Teixeira's going to be Volkov, and then he's going to retire, and then the title's going to be vacant. And who's going to fight for the vacant title? Adesanya versus Prochazka.
Let's do it.
January 2023. You're welcome, world. And I think we have done enough here. And about, 7 hours from right now? Yes. AK and I are back right here in these very seats, looking dapper, fresh, tons of sleep. And we're going to do some matchmaking. On to the next one. 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. We'll see you here. And thank you all for watching all the coverage throughout the day, the night, the last 5 hours. But you're all the real MVP. So for AK, for Jed, for Sean, I am Mike Heck. Good night, everybody.
Happy birthday, Mike Heck.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Mike Heck.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.